So we are holding on Hey Allison with Bays about the middle of the afternoon on Mandalorian night. We learned in the Mishnah that a person is allowed to be in a man is allowed to be in Yichud with his mother or with his daughter. So Gemara starts off, Amar of Yehuda, Amar of Asi, Misyachad Adam Imachosai, a person is also, a man is also allowed to be in Yichud with his sister. However, Rashi adds to that, that only Leprakim, only for occasional periods. Given, even Rav Asi after all can't disagree with the Mishnah, the Mishnah didn't mention anything about sisters. So therefore, it means that it can be on a temporary basis. Different postgim, different poshim and postgim talk about the detail. I mean, the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch actually don't even bring this halacha at all, which implies that they're saying we don't agree about a sister, which would seem to imply that they don't agree with you. And they would say that, fine, you know, the Mishnah only said a mother, the Mishnah only carved out exceptions for a mother and a daughter. That means a sister, not. But there are postgim. No, but if they meant it's mutter, they would have said so. So there is that argument, and therefore, according to them, would mean that it is ulcer. But there are other poskim, though, who bring the possibility that, fine, maybe the halacha is like the last message. So, you mind putting your phone on mute? Where were we? So there are poskim though who do agree with this concept of achoso in the prakim. What the prakim means then is questionable. It may mean for 3 days, it may mean for 30 days. Rav Moshe has a couple of tshuva about it where he discusses that there's no fixed amount that you can give. It basically means a brother can come to visit his sister and be alone together, but they can't live together on their own. We're talking about without their parents. Not only they can't live together, but also it can't be the kind of thing where like he's obviously staying for a long term period.
Well, there's no definite period.
Right, they're right. So no fixed period, but it all depends on how they're in. I'm sorry. The daughter in bitter, and then a person is allowed to be in yichud with his sister, says Rashi, and he's allowed to live, meaning b'kfius, with his mother or with his daughter, and there's no problem of yichud there. So then when Rav Asi told this, when Rav Yehuda rather, told this over to Shmuel, first Rav Yehuda had learned by Rav Asi later on. It doesn't matter. His mother or his daughter, we assume there's no Yetzirah for them. Rashi brings actually in this connection, the Gemara in Yuma and in Sanhedrin, that the Chachamim, the Anshik Nesagdela, davened and got rid of the Yetzirah for a person's close relatives. So a person doesn't have such a Yetzirah for his close relatives. And therefore, yeah. So then when Rabbi Yehuda told this over to Shmuel, Omar Shmuel said, no, you're not allowed to be in Yichud with any of the Arayis, even not with an animal. Now, I mean, on the other hand, the Mishnah said clearly a mother and a daughter, yes. So there are some Mephoshim learn that Shmuel is saying fine, you know, there's the exception of a mother that's mentioned in the Mishnah that we actually learned yesterday from a Remez and a Pasuk. But that's it.
How do you explain the Mishnah allows
So one possibility is he would say that the Mishnah is talking with Raisa and he's talking with Rabbana. The other possibility is even if he's saying Midrash, he may even mean that Doraisa. Again, a mother, fine, is an exception. The Torah itself, the same, the Torah hints at the concept of Yichud, but it exempts the mother and a son, so therefore that's it. But everything else would be after.
Everything really depends on the Torah.
Yes. And the same one, Okay, the Gemara says, Tznan, what about our Mishnah? The Mishnah clearly said that a man can be in Yichud with his mother or his daughter, and he can sleep with them with skin-to-skin contact. Or to the Shmuel, wouldn't that be a contradiction to Shmuel? The answer is, Amalok Shmuel. Shmuel answers, really Taimecha, according to your own Svara. You ask him from the Mishnah. Hadatanya, on the other hand, you have a Braisha that says, Achoyse v'chamoyse, a man's sister or mother-in-law, or Shalkal Arayas Shabbat or any of the other Arayas that are in the Torah, Ein Misyachadim Oem Elab Eidim. You can only be in Yichud with them with Eidim. Fine. A Braisha can contradict the Mishnah. They both come from Sanoim. Therefore, wait. Be'edim ain, shalai be'edim loy, implying the Mishnah, the Braisa is only allowing it with these kinds of relatives, only with Edim, not otherwise. Ella, and he said, kol arai is Shabbat Torah, pashtus meaning a mother and a daughter as well. Ella, tanoim. Necessarily, you must say that Shmuel would say it's machloka tanoim. So fine, Rav Asi can say his way, and he can use the Mishnah as his support. I'm entitled to say my way of using the Braisa. And how do we see it's Machor B'Tanayim? In the Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, Amar Rav Meir, that Rav Meir used to say to his Tamidim, he's Zarum be Mipnei Biti. Be careful of me because of my daughter. Make sure, see to it that I'm not in Yichud alone with my daughter. Similarly, Amar Rav Tzivah. Not that he had a Tzivah, but he wanted to show his Talmidim. Again, I mean, yesterday we had the story of how Rav Meir was seized by a tremendous Yetzer Hara, and afterwards, how do we know the story? But actually, he told his Talmidim to know to be careful. But the point still remains that he's not saying I have a Tzivah for her, but he's saying I hold by the din that you're also to be misyakim with any arayas, and therefore I'm telling you maybe I don't have a type for her. Of course not, a normal person doesn't. However, you should know a din is a din, and you have to be careful about it. Similarly, Omer Rav Tavkin, he's Arum named Kalosi. Similarly, Rav Tavkin used to say to somebody, "Be careful of me that I'm not in yichud with my daughter-in-law." We're there for sure. There for sure. Right? There doesn't seem to be any heter, neither from the Mishnah nor from the Braisa. Liglugol of Oyser Talmud. So the Gemara continues, the Braisa continues. A certain Talmud laughs at him, like, "Hey, talking, you're being so as they say, shachniot about it." I said, yeah. But Amar Ababo, Mishum Rachaninim and Gambiel, Loi Hoyu Yomim Mu'atim, not very long past, that Shenichshal Oyser Talmud, it's Bachamoyse, until that Talmud ended up stumbling with his mother-in-law, meaning he ended up being in Yichud with her, and then one thing led to another. So we see we see what happened because he was malig al divrei chachamim. It's true, you know, when the chachamim were very well aware of human nature. Yes, the person normally doesn't have a taiva for these things, but you never know. Yeah. Now, when we're saying afilu in behema, when Shmuel had said you're not allowed to be in yichud with an animal, so the Gemara tells in that connection, Abaya mechalala mekula debara, Abaya mekula dabra, Abaya would remove all the animals from the field, meaning when Rashi says when Abaya would go out to the field to sit and review his learning, you know, like in a peaceful setting or whatever, he would make sure that there were no animals in the field in order to avoid yichud with them. That's one. Then Rashi brings another explanation. That's one explanation in Rashi. Then he brings another explanation that not Abaya himself, but Abaya would not allow a shepherd to be alone with his animals in the field.
There should be two men there.
At least. Yeah, I guess. Similarly, Rav Sheshes Mavrilay Metzra, Rav Sheshes would cross the footbridge to be on the other side, not the footbridge. Rav Sheshes would remove them to the other side of the boundary of the field, so he would make sure at least they may be out there, but at least they're a distance away on the other side of the field. Now everybody agrees, pretty much everybody agrees, all the Mefarshim, that we're not talking about human Tzad Adin. We're talking over here, this is already a matter of midas chassidim. The Gemara is going to tell us on Tebeis and Manalas that normally Jewish men are not suspect of bestiality. Another case, Rav Chanan min Hadar ikhlal Rav Kahana in Pumnara. One time Rav Chanan min Hadar visited Rav Kahana in Pumnara. Chaz Yediyotev, he saw Rav Kahana was sitting with Kogoris and he was learning. Kaima Behema Kamein, there was an animal standing in front of him. Amalei says, don't you agree with what Shmuel said that you can't be in yichud with an animal? Okay, so right now there's two of us here, fine, but what about before? Amalei Lavadatoi. So Rav Kahana said, you're right, I didn't notice that the animal was here because I was chatef to learn. Amar Rav, misyachad adam im shtei yivomos, a man is allowed to be alone together with two yivomos, two sisters-in-law. Which these and all the other cases we're going to mention are all the ones that we had in Yevamos, where typically you have two women who hate each other because they're actual or potential rivals. So, for example, two Yevamos, is one of them is married to somebody. If he should die childless, his brother is going to have to do Yivam with Chalitza, and you're going to end up with both of them as sorrows to each other. We're not talking, they're not sisters, obviously, then there wouldn't be Yibum or Chalitz, as we learned back in Yibamas. They're two unrelated women. They're only related by being sisters-in-law. So they may end up being co-wives. They may end up being and therefore they hate each other. So therefore, you can be alone with them because the whole reason you can't be alone with two women is because one of them may cover up for the other. Well, here, they hate each other. They're not going to. Similarly, Vim Shtei Tzoros, you can be alone together with two Tzoros, same idea. Im Ishva Chamoser, with a mother and her mother-in-law. Im Isho Bas Baila, or with a woman and her stepdaughter. in Ish, there's a couple of different Gersoids over here. The Bach and then the Gura bring some other Gersoids about the Hamoyt as a mother-in-law. Hagoyt Agra and Hagoyt Bach also add Isho Bach Hamoyt, that also a mother and her mother-in-law's daughter. Mother. Hamoyt, that's the word for it in Hebrew.
Okay.
Yeah, but why? I don't know. I have no idea. Truth is actually in Lashon Kodesh, in Tanakh Hebrew, there's an interesting distinction between a man's in-laws and a woman's in-laws. A man's in-laws are called Chom and Chomoyt. The other way around. A woman's in-laws are called Chom and Chomoyt. And a man's in-laws, his wife's parents, are called Choysen and Choysen. But in Mishnah and Gemara, Lashon Kodesh, in Lashon Chachamim, they use the word Chom and Chomoyt for all of them. Yeah. So they add also the case of Isho Bach Hamoyt. So there are other Mekorishim say maybe not necessarily, because Isho Bach Hamoyt is only a potential thing. They might end up in a rivalry situation. Not necessarily is that strong enough to allow you. And one more, Rava says, in Isha, you're allowed to be together with a woman, Vitinoikis, and along with a girl, she adas Tambia, where this girl is old enough to know what Bia is about, they may set a Fatma Bia, but will not give herself over to it. What that age is, there's a lot of discussion among the Poshim, among the Poshim. The consensus seems to be, and by the way, this applies to boys as well, this is where we have the whole concept of a Shomer, and we're all familiar with, for example, the concept when it happens that a Kos and Kala get married and the Kala is a Nidah, for one reason or another, then you have to have Shomerim. They're not allowed to be together in the same room without a Shomer. The Minog is usually you have a boy and a girl there to be Shomerim for both of them. The consensus among the Poshim seems to be that it's between about the ages of 6 and 9. At that age, they already can begin to have an idea what Bia is, but they're too young to be interested in it themselves, and therefore, again, they're not going to. If something does happen, they will tell about it. So therefore, if you can be alone with a woman and a girl like that is a shomer, because again, if you try to be mizana with a woman, the girl won't allow herself to be dragged into it as well. She's too young. And fakir, she will tell. As opposed to, if she's too young, she won't know what's going on. And if she's older, she may herself get dragged in. The Mishnah continued, Higdilu de Yashin B'Ksusa. The whole of that, we said, a man is allowed to sleep with skin-to-skin contact together with his daughter or mother together with his son. But then the Mishnah had said, when they get older, then each one has to be in their own clothes. Like no more skin to skin contact. Vikama, what's the age? But if it's a girl, if it's a father and a daughter, we're talking about when she reaches 9 years old. And one day just means 9 full years. It means not the beginning of the ninth year. It means when it's 9 full years. And a boy 12 years old. Magoyt HaBach brings that the Rosh has a different girsa. The Rosh's girsa is a girl 3 and a boy 9, or another version, a girl 11, a boy 12.
So what is it?
You have different girsas, and therefore there's going to be differences in halacha. Ikadamri, or another version. A girl when she's 12, a boy when he's 13. In both cases, Kadeshiyi or Shadayim Mechoner Sa'arat Simea. It's the age where there can start being that breasts develop and hair, meaning pubic hair, Shtei Cyrus grows. So,
those
two things usually come together, right? I mean, I'm not a boy, obviously, but we're using a Lashon HaPasuk, which applies to a girl, but you'd have similar things to the boy. So Rashi explains like this. Again, the girsa that we have here in the Gemara, which is that the first version is a girl 9, a boy 12, and the second version a girl 12, a boy 13. The vert is, even according to the first version, that we say 9 and 12, now usually girls and boys don't start maturing at that age, but sometimes they do. Sometimes 12 and 13 are the normal ages. That's the ikadam. Nine and 12 is not usual. However, it does happen. Sometimes it happens that children start to hit puberty early.
12 is beginning to stop.
For boys, maybe, but usually the normal age is 13. For a girl, 9, okay, but sometimes, in other words, Tirashi says the vote is like this. If the girl is nine, and there's Shadayim Nechonu, Sa'orah Tzimeach, that's when she has to not sleep in the same bed without skin-to-skin contact with her father anymore. But if she's nine and does not have this physical development yet, then she can.
So who makes the father have to know or whether she has
to know? She has to know, yeah. I guess he asks his wife or whatever he himself sees when she, whatever. So there's that explanation, and the Rif has a different girsa, which is the other way around, that even when they're 12 or 13, respectively, if there's not Shadayim Nechonu Sarach Tzimeach yet, it's still allowed. It has to be only that, according to the Rif girsa, it would be that only if they're 12 or 13, respectively, and Shadayim Nechonu Sarach Tzimeach. So now, like Rashi says, for example, nine, with these physical development, or 12 and 13 without them, but rather the Rif's understanding would be it has to be both. Yeah. Okay. Amar Rakhram Bab Hafa, Amar Rakhisa, Moishonu Ela Sheina Borisha Lamed Lefon of Orum. All of this is only, no, I'm sorry, actually, the Rif's Girsa is not as far as the Shaddai Mechonah Sarah Tzimeh. Sorry, the Rif's Girsa that's different is as far as the next piece that we're going to have here.
What is the Rif's
Girsa? So as far as this is what we had here. So we had again we have the Girsa that we have here in the Gemara, which is the first version in the Gemara is respectively 9 and 12. The second is 12 and 13 plus Shadayim Nechonu Sarach Tzimeach. Then the Bach brings up the Rosh gives a Girsa that the Gemara starts off by saying either 3 and 9 respectively or 11 and 12. And then according to that, it would be the Shadayim Nechonu Sarach Tzimeach applies to the 11 and 12. Obviously, it doesn't apply to the 3 and 9. No 3-year-old is developing like that already. The halacha in Shulchan Aruch, I'm not sure which of the posts. I mean, practically speaking, who does this nowadays anyway? Beyond a certain age, children don't usually sleep in the nude with their parents anyhow. Yeah. All this is only talking about if she's not embarrassed to stand undressed in front of him. The mother with the son or the father with the daughter. But if it reached the point where she is embarrassed to stand in front of him undressed, also then it's also my time at Yetzer Albasha. Because at that point, the Yetzer of Bia has already started in clothing for her. Meaning, in other words, if you have a child who's already embarrassed to stand undressed in front of a parent of the opposite gender, it shows already they have an idea that, you know, they're already starting to have this sexual awakening, and therefore, yeah. Now, here's where the Rif has a different girsa. Now, our girsa is that we're talking even if the boy is below 9 or 11, as the case is 9 or 12, as the case may be, and the girl, the girl is below 9 or 12, and the boy is below 11 or 13, whatever the girsa is over here, then even if it's below that, if they're embarrassed, then no. The Rif's girsa is that the other way around, even if they're already 12 and 13, and even if already Shadayim Nechonu Sarach Tzimeach, they already have physical development, if they're not embarrassed, then they can still continue until it reaches the point where they're embarrassed.
That's the reason.
Okay. The Gemara tells a case. Rav Acha bar Abba one time visited the house of Rav Chista, who was his son-in-law. Shakla lebas brate, he took his granddaughter, Rav Chista's daughter, and he put her under the blanket with him. He was laying down in bed, and he put her in the bed with him. And again, the skin-to-skin contact.
Oh, was she?
It doesn't say, but wait. Omalei, so Rav Chista tells him, what are you doing? Like, Sovala Marder, Hadra. Don't you realize that she's Mekudeshet? Fine, even if you want to argue maybe that there's not such an issue with a granddaughter, but she's Mekudeshet already, and therefore the Neishas Ish. Okay, Mepharshim have a bit of time discussing why exactly the fact that she's an Neishas Ish should make a difference. Is it because maybe she's his granddaughter, she's an Erev Hakeim anyhow? So what's the difference whether an Neishas Ish is also an Erev? What's the difference? So they talk about different possibilities, including that maybe, yes, the fact that she's an Eishas Ish does add a new dimension of Isser, or maybe there's the fact that once she's already Mekudeshes, where the Rambam seems to have the Girsa that she's actually married, whatever, then already since you know there's Bia involved, this is how the Ramosh Feinstein moves in Igros Moshe, that since already you know that Bia is going to be following, then that already creates a certain kind of hirhur that you wouldn't have had otherwise.
And if she was not an Ish,
then Rav Chista wouldn't have had a problem with it, because apparently she was below the age. Anyway.
We said she needs to be below the age, and she has not to be shamed.
Fine, so she wasn't embarrassed. She was embarrassed. She was below the age. It would have been good, except for Rav Chista saying she's already Mekudeshet. Amalei, in that case, Rav Acha bar Abba says to him, Avar to l'cha adu Rav. In that case, you should know, by being Mekadosh her at such a young age, you were oibu on what Rav said. To Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, he came to Rav Elazar. We learned at the beginning of the second parak. Also, l'adam, she Mekadosh his bitte tritana. A man is also to be Mekadosh his daughter when she's young. Adshatagdil, until she gets older, the time of the Pliny Anu Yosef. And she says, I want to marry Pliny. You didn't do that, so what are you doing? You're asking me, how you talking? I'm laying down in a bed with her with skin-to-skin contact. How you talking? You were Mekadosh her at such an age in the first place. Okay. On the other hand, Rav Chista answers, Mar Nami, Ovalot, Le'ad Shmuel. Fine, but aren't you being over on what Shmuel says? Do'amah Shmuel in Mishtam Shem Be'isha. Shmuel said, we had this in the whole story of Rav Yehuda and Rav Nachman earlier in the parak, you're not allowed to make use of a woman. So what are you doing that you're laying down in a bed with her in order to that she'll warm you up or whatever it is? You're not allowed to do that. Never mind whether she's Mekudeshes or not. Amalei, sort of Acha answers him, I'm not Ki'idah, Shmuel, severely. Yes, but I actually hold like a different statement of Shmuel. D'amah Shmuel ha'kol l'shem shamayim. Shmuel says, it all depends on whether it's done l'shem shamayim. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says that I'm not doing this for the sake of I'm not doing this for the, not a joke. In other words, there's two reasons. Why might you want to lie with somebody in bed with skin to skin contact? There might be because of the taiva that brings you, or there might be. In this case, it's not. It's because in order to, Rashi says, I want her mother to be satisfied knowing that I love her daughter, my granddaughter. So it's not a matter. It's not a hear her type of thing. It's a family closeness type of thing.
There's no other way to love, show the love.
This is one way. So based on this, the Ritva says that what the Gemara seems to be ending up saying is that it really depends on your intention. Now, granted, not everybody can say on themselves, I have pure intentions, therefore I can do whatever I want. It's still one of those things that a person needs to be truthful with themselves.
But instead of it serious, with what we said yesterday about the Yitzhara, even by...
Yeah, but again, we're talking a close relative. A normal person doesn't have a type for such close relatives like a granddaughter anyway. But even yesterday we talked about the cases we were talking about was talking about another woman, not a close relative like that. Yeah.
I agree.
Okay. Tosfos mentions, based on this, in fact, now we said before, Shmuel said, Ein Mishtam Shem Be'ishi, you're not allowed to have a woman serve you, for example. That was in the story of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nachman. Rabbi Yehuda had objected to having Donag, Rabbi Nachman's daughter, come and serve them drinks. On the other hand, we're saying here, Akol L'Shem Shemayim. Tosfos says, it's taka, based on this, that we do have women serve drinks or food or whatever, and we don't have a problem with it. For the same reason, Akol L'Shem Shemayim, because it really depends what your intentions are. Mishnah says, an unmarried man, Ravach means an unmarried man, Tosfos brings from the Targum, that's the Targum of the word Bochur, should not teach Sofrim. Rashi says that Sofrim means teacher, means Malamdin. So according to Rashi, in other words, the meaning is, lo yulmad odom Ravach Sofrim, that a Ravach should not be in the habit of being a Malamdin. Tosfos learns it differently. Tosfos learns that the Sofrim are the children themselves, and therefore, if lo yilamed adam ravak Sofrim, a ravak, an unmarried man, should not be teaching children in cheder, should not be a malamed.
Either it means that he should not teach.
So either it means he himself shouldn't be a teacher. It amounts to the same thing, but it either means that he shouldn't regularly be a teacher, like maybe he can be a substitute according to Rashi, but not a regular children's teacher. And according to Tosfos, means he shouldn't be teaching children, the pashtus meaning at all. Velaytalamid isha sofrim, also a woman should not teach sofrim. Again, according to Rashi, it would mean that a woman should not be a malamid in a cheder. Sofrim, again, meaning a malamid, that a woman, loytilamid isha, she should not be used to being a malamid. According to Tosfos, again, it would mean that she shouldn't teach children, that she shouldn't be teaching boys in cheder. Reasons for this we'll talk about in the Gemara. Rivaloza Omer, Afni she'en lo isha lo yilamid sofrim, lo yilamid, lo yilamid sofrim. Rivaloza says also somebody who doesn't have a wife should not be a malamed. What's the difference between a ravak and somebody who doesn't have a wife? We'll talk about in the Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda, I mean, lo yura ravak behemer. Rabbi Yehuda says an unmarried man should not take care of animals, should not herd animals, because there may be a problem of bestiality. Vlo yishner shnei ravak and betalis achas, and two unmarried men should not sleep together under one talis, because you may have they may have improper relations. But Chamatzurim, where's the
Chamatzurim?
So the Rambam Mepharshim would say what it means is even if both of them are wearing underwear, they shouldn't be under one blanket. No, a talus just means an outer covering. One of the Mefarshim, I think it's the Radal, says a cute thing on it. He says, in the Dorim, I think it is, the Gemara tells us that Rabbi Yehuda's Talmidim were so poor that six of them would have to share one talis. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is warning them, you may have to share one talis, like if you're sitting in the Mismadrash or whatever, be careful you don't share it when you're going to bed.
And that's even with clothes?
That's what we're saying, even if they're wearing underwear or whatever, and they're just there. So Gemara starts off, my time. What's the reason why we're saying that an unmarried man should not be a Malamed? Is it because of the problem that he may do Mishkab Zachar with the boys? Well, Hatanya, but we learn it right. The Chachamim said to Rabbi Yehuda regarding the Sefer of the Mishnah, Jews are not ordinarily suspect about Mishkab Zachar or about bestiality. So what are you worried about? In other words, if in the ratio you had Rabbi Yehuda saying it's author and the Chachamim saying it's motor, fine. But like this, it sounds everybody agrees it's author. What's the problem? Ella, no, the thing is like this. Ravak mishumam hosa biyinuki. The reason why an unmarried man, a bachar, should not be a malamed is because of the mothers of the children. They come all the time. They bring their children to cheder. Therefore, now, so what exactly is the problem? Some of the Farshim talk about, therefore, the problem. It's not so much necessarily a problem of yichud. Among other things, you have boys there, after all. They can be shomerim. But it's more a problem of hiru, that him being around them all the time, mela if he's married, that sort of takes off the edge, especially because if he does start having machshavas zoros, he can always, most of the time, his wife is tahor, and he'll be able to have relations with her. But if he's a bachur, then he doesn't have that outlet, and therefore. There are other mafarshim who explain that it may be a matter of yichud, and therefore the boys can't be considered shomerim because they respect their teacher and they wouldn't they go along with the boys. Yeah, okay. And isha mishum avhasadi inoki, and with a woman teaching, the problem is the other way around. Sometimes you have the father who's bringing the boys. Same idea. And there also it talks about the question, what about, we learned yesterday that Baila Ba'ir, that if her husband is, now, you notice the Mishnah did not say Ravaka, the Mishnah just said Isha, which means a woman generically, the Chodah means even a married woman. So therefore they discuss, well, what about Baila Ba'ir? Didn't we say yesterday that Baila Ba'ir was no problem of Yehud? So again, you have the two possibilities. Either we're saying the problem is not so much Yehud as Hirhur, and since a woman is not the one who initiates marital relations anyhow, then if there ends up being kiruv between the fathers and her, or between her and the fathers, she's not easily going to have an outlet for it. Or the other possibility is, and this is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that the issue is more if her husband is likely to be traveling. If her husband is always at home, then fine, it's not a problem. But if he's regularly traveling on business, you can't expect her to not teach every time he goes out of town and resume teaching when he comes back, so therefore, yes. The Mishnah said that Rabbi Elazar said that also a man who doesn't have a wife should not be a Malamed. So now the Chachamim had a question. What does it mean? Misha ain't la isha klal. Does it mean a man who's unmarried at all? Maybe it's talking about he is married, but his wife is not nearby. She's out of town or whatever. Well, Toshma. Come, let's prove from a Braitha. Ask Mishi Yeshleva in a Shriya. That a Braitha says, and this is apparently the opinion of Rabbi Elazar, that also if he has a wife, the Ein Shriya, but she's not living with him, he also should not be a Malamed. So therefore we see the difference is, the Tanakhama is saying as long as he's married, even if his wife is not around, that's fine, because he won't have such a taiva. Exactly. And according to Rabbi Elazar, yeah, it's a problem even in that case. Who the halacha is like, whether the halacha is like the chachamim or like Rabbi Elazar, that you have different opinions among the person. The Mishnah said Rabbi Yehuda Amar Lo Yirachula. The Rabbi Yehuda said that an unmarried man should not herd animals, should not take care of animals, and that two unmarried men shouldn't sleep under the same garment. And then Chacham said it's mutter because Tanya we learn a brayta. Amar Lo Rabbi Yehuda. Chacham told Rabbi Yehuda it's not such a problem. Lo Nechshu Yisrael on Mishkav Zachar v'lo Yala Behema. Jews are not suspected of Mishkav Zachar or about animals.
It's a brayta.
Yeah. So therefore, there's not a problem. Now, we did say before that to not be in Yichud with a behema is, we had Shmuel saying that's awesome, and we said it's midas chassidus. So it does actually, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch on the post, that there is, if you want to be a noyig minig chassidus, be a baal nefesh, and not be in Yichud with an animal, or for that matter with close relatives, like we said before, then fine, tovay elavrach. It's the pastures, yeah, but having said that, actually, the Maharshal says that it depends. Marshall says it depends. If we're talking about not being in Yichud with your close relatives, fine. Go ahead and do that if you want to. Like we had Rameyer and Rav Tarfon saying, don't allow me to be in Yichud with my daughter or my daughter-in-law. However, if it's talking about a zocher or an animal, then no. The Maharshal says, actually, that you shouldn't be, don't be machmer on it, because that's a very messy kiyura. That's not a normal kind of chumra that most people keep, and therefore you're going to make it look like you're trying to be some kind of big shot, like you're trying to be some holier-than-thou person. Actually, an interesting thing, it's brought...
You could say
the same thing about Yichud in general, but there are standards, you know. Again, a Kol L'Shem Shemayim maybe creates a heter when there's other reasons to be master. It's his granddaughter in the case of Rav Acha. It's you're at a table and women are serving or whatever. We're not talking about in private. But I was going to say actually an interesting thing sort of to the contrary as far as this business of yichud between one male and another is the Gemara brings, I think it's in Pesachim, that a man shouldn't sleep alone, like alone in a house or a room or whatever. Based on that, there's the chassidish minhag that if you are alone, you should light a candle or something. But it's brought in Minhagim Ma'aril, put on a nightlight or whatever, in Minhagim Ma'aril, it brings the Ma'aril held very strongly by that, and therefore he would always have one of the Bacharim, one of the Talmidim in the Yeshiva, always he'd have a rotation or something, that one of the Bacharim would always be sleeping in the same room as him. So obviously he wasn't concerned about the problem of Yichud, and therefore that supports what the Maharshal was saying, that there's no reason to be machmir in that.
But Dafri was saying the opposite, he should not be alone.
So that's what I'm saying, so that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The shadim or whatever, I don't know. Mishnah says, Kol she'asaka v'manoshim, anybody who has business with women, for example, a peddler who sells cosmetics, or somebody who somebody who does like weaving or whatever, lo yisyachad v'manoshim, he should not be alone with women. Now, what does that mean? Anybody, nobody's allowed to be alone with women. So Rashi says what it means is that before we said that a man is not allowed to be alone with two women, implying that he could be alone with more than two. If iskoyim anoshim, then not even that. He can't even be alone with many women because already libri gasa. But like we said yesterday, he's very comfortable around them, and it's much more likely something improper may happen. Tosfos argues on that.
He has any business with his women, so
wait. Let me just finish with the explanation, then we'll talk about it. Tosfos says that no, that's not what it means, because what about the cases we had yesterday involving where there's men in one room and women in another room adjacent to each other? Last day we were talking about many men and many women. So therefore, Tosfos says that no, lo yisyachad im anoshim means a different thing. We learned yesterday that it was the heter of ishtar imo, that if his wife is with him, then she's mishamaret. But if iska im anoshim, then that heter does not apply. You can't say that ishtar mishamaret, because again, he's too over-familiar with these women. Then there's a third explanation that Amnon says. It's not saying any more chumra for such a person than anybody else. All it's saying is you would think, Faker, because it's his business, because it's what he does for a living, maybe he should have a heter. No, he doesn't have any more heter for Yichud than anybody else.
Cannot run his business.
No, so he'll have to make sure that there's somebody around. He'll have to make sure that there's Pesach Pasuach or Baila Ba'ir or whatever the various other considerations. So you're asking the same thing. What if you have women in your office? Same idea. You'd have to make sure that there's a door that anybody can walk in at any time, or a window where anybody can see you, whatever, yeah. Continues the Mishnah. A man should not teach his son. We learned earlier in the Masechta, you're supposed to teach your son a trade. Don't teach him the kind of trade that's going to have him involved with women all the time. Since we're talking about teaching a son a trade, so the Mishnah sort of digresses about this. Rav Meir Omer, La'olam yilamad adamas no umnis nikki avakala. A person should always teach his son a clean and easy craft. We'll talk about in the Gemara what's an example of that, but what we mean by clean and easy, the Marsha says in particular it means, for example, that it'll be clean and easy in the sense like something that he can make a parnasa from relatively easily and then have a lot of time available for learning. The Aruch talks about nakia in the sense like it's something that there won't be any dishonesty possible in it. Yeah.
It's an umanus.
It's an umanus. It's a trade, a craft, yeah.
Not business.
Really. No, yeah. And then a person should daven to the Eibishter who owns all the wealth and all the property. Because after all, there's no craft, there's no trade in which there aren't poor people and rich people, no matter what. In any kind of line of work, there's always some people do well in it, some people don't. So you teach him an appropriate craft. You teach him an appropriate craft or trade or way to make a living or whatever. But then you daven to the Eibishter that way should be successful. Because ultimately you don't become poor or rich from the type of work that you do. Everything goes according to your schut. Now, Tosfos has an interesting take on this. Tosfos says an interesting thing over here. The word schut does not mean what we usually think of as schut, as in the amount of mitzvahs he does. Rather, it means his mazel. Because the Gemara tells us elsewhere in Moed Kodem that boni chayyeh mazoni depends on your mazel. With that said, mazel means in other words the root of your neshama. In other words, you have. Sometimes the Gemara tells us in various places, for example, Rabbi Lazar, where it was one of the greatest of the Avnoroyim in Eretz Yisrael, was very, very poor. The Gemara tells us a whole story about it in Tainus, various others. So it all depends on how the Eibishter arranged that this person should be in the world. With that said, Marshal says, after all, it does also have the meaning of schus in the usual sense we think of it, because ultimately, ein mazel Yisrael, a person is not, a yid is not totally controlled by his mazel. It can always be overturned with tremendous tefillah and avoda. So therefore, yeah.
But the Eibishter gives you a certain amount of...
So the Eibishter gives you a certain talent, gives you, in fact, the Sefer Kada Kemach from Rabbeinu Bechaya points out that what the Mishnah is saying over here is everybody has certain natural aptitudes or whatever. Teach your son according to his aptitude for whatever he seems to have an aptitude for, and then daven to the Eibishter that should actually be Matzliach and then giving him Parnasi.
Should we really go after our aptitudes specifically?
Well, yes and no. I mean, you know, again, if the Eibishter gave you a certain talent, then try to use it, yeah. In a kosher way, of course. Reb Shimon Elazar, speaking of this matter of parnasa and becoming poor and rich from it, Reb Shimon Elazar, have you ever seen in your life a wild animal or a bird that has any kind of craft? They don't work for a living. They're sustained without any tsar. They have what they need is available to them. But haloyla nivru el shamsheni. Now, after all, those creatures were created only in order to serve me. Vani nivreitu the shamash tsayni. And I, a yid, was thus created to serve the Eibishter. Ein din she spanish shalav tsar. Wouldn't it be logical that I ought to be sustained without tsar? How you talk and what makes it that people have to work for a living in the first place? That's a much of the to make a living. I messed up in my actions. I didn't act the right way. Therefore I cut off my panasa, meaning if a person were really on a proper level, on a high level, like other magician before the Chet Hadas, or like occasional great tzaddikim, Shabakhodervadur, then the Eibishter would provide for a person without that.
You see that in nature animals do have umanus, like a spider has an umanus.
First of all, we're not saying there's no animals that have an onus.
Right.
There are some animals that have an onus. You have animals that sometimes use tools or whatever, but by and large, your average chayer does not have an onus. They just find what they need ready made.
Clearly, ravens know how to make tools.
Yeah, so there's fine. So there is that sometimes, but yeah. But by and large, overall, they find what we need. Now, by the way, it's interesting.
Is that any money?
I don't know, maybe. Interesting over here. You know, here we have the Girsa, Ani Nivreisi L'Shamash Toini. The famous line that's always quoted on this, that Rebbe used to quote it innumerable times in Sichas, is it comes actually from the version that's in a manuscript of the Mishnayos and also in Yalkut Shimoni. That's a little bit different. Ani lo nivreisi ela l'shamash atoni. I was not created except to serve my Creator. But as I talked about a number of times, the difference is the difference in the nuance and meaning between those. Ani, among others, starting with Marshall explains the word Ani Nivreisi the Shamash Koini implies I was created to serve the Eibishter. However, I have Bechira Chofshi. A person can always choose to serve the Eibishter or not to. So you can't say about a person Ani Lo Nivreisi El the Shamash Koini as if there's no other possibility, because there is a possibility. A person can always disobey the Eibishter. So and then various.
We know that. I mean,
no, the point is that Eber talks about why then the other gifts, so why the gifts in Yalkut Shimoni and the Loini Grace the El Shamash Koini, because there's a difference. There's the actual reality, and then there's the purpose for which the Eber should create you. In actuality, sure, I mean, you've raised the Shamash Koini, a person has a choice. Unlike, for example, animals, where their whole purpose for existence is to serve mankind.
Does it mean that,
as opposed to Ani Lo Nivreisi Ela L'Shamash Koini, is describing the Eibishter's ultimate intent in creating us? The intention is that a person should not think of himself as a mitzius of his own, as a yesh of his own, as somebody that could disobey the Eibishter, but rather a person sees himself as I have no mitzius of my own other than serving the Eibishter. Yeah. continues the Mishnah.
That's
Osei Patera. No, not even necessarily Osei Patera. No, even a person who's working for a living can be on that level where he realizes that his whole mitzvah is only in order to serve the Eibishter. And the Rambam describes it in, I think, Hilchos Osei Patera or Hilchos Trova, I forget where it is, that you have a person who truly believes in this. When he goes to work, he's working for the sake of that he should have money for tzedakah and to be able to be mechanech his children and make a Shabbos and Yom Tov meal and whatever. And when he eats, he's eating that he should have strength to be able to serve the Eibishter. When he has relations, he's doing that for period of Arivia and to prevent himself from Machshavas Zaras. And that way, every single thing he's doing, even when he sleeps, he's serving the Eibishter. He's an Oved Hashem. That's what we're talking about. Continues. No, Abba Gurion ish Sidon Omer Mishum Abba Gurion. Well, you're speaking of going now back to the topic of what kind of living, what kind of things to make a living a person should teach his child. Well, you're Lamed Adamus Nechamor. A person should not teach his son the trade of being a donkey driver, gamel or camel driver, kader, a wagon driver, sapon, a sailor, roya, or a shepherd, the chenveni, or storekeeper, shomunus and umnus listin, because all these types of trade involve theft, robbery. So Rashi explains, for example, that the donkey driver and the camel driver, for example, they stay sometimes overnight by the side of the road. They go and pick fruit or not fruit, whatever, wood off of people's trees, wood or fruit off people's trees or orchards or whatever without permission. Sometimes, for example, you hire them for a job and they overcharge or they don't do their duties properly. In the case of shepherds, Rashi says that also some very often they take the animals to graze in other people's fields. A chenveni is a storekeeper. They muzzle their animals. Okay, we're not saying that every...
All their animals?
They muzzle their animals.
All of them?
Yeah, whenever they were passing through other people's land, yeah. So, again, we're not talking every single donkey driver is no good or every. We're talking on the whole, so therefore these are not the ideal kind of things to teach your children. There are Mepharshim who learn differently. There are Mepharshim who learn that maybe that I think Marsha says, that the Roya and the Chenveni involve a lot of dishonest dealing for the reasons that we said, because Royim commonly have, then the Chenveni, they commonly cheat their customers. The other ones, the Chamor, Gamor, Kader, Safon, is not so much because of dishonesty, but rather because they're away from home a lot. So therefore, that's not such a good thing.
Okay. The chenveni is
but the chenveni and the neroya tend by and large to not be honest people. Yet. Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Abba Gurion, Hachamorin Ruben Rishoyim, most donkey drivers are Rishoyim for the reasons that we just said. Vagamolin Ruben Ksherim, however, most camel drivers are usually kosher because what happens, it actually says they go in the desert, they go in dangerous places. We're talking about Jews, but maybe to a certain extent goyim also, I don't know. But the point is, because they're traveling in dangerous places like the desert, therefore they feel more humble before the Eibishter. They always realize that their lives are in danger and that they have to depend more on the Eibishter. That's a pun in Ruben Chassidim. Most sailors are Chassidim because they're in even more danger than the camel drivers. As an example, in Tanakh, you have the sailors from Yonah's ship, even before they threw Yonah into the water, they're realizing the whole thing came on them from the Eibishter, and then
yeah.
Mepharshim talk about an interesting thing also based on the Psukim in Kapitel Kuf Zayin, that also sailors have much more of a chance than anybody else to see the greatness of the Eibishter and the sea creatures and whatever, and therefore it gives them a certain closer relationship with the Eibishter.
But on the other hand, if they far away from their wives, always on.
There is that. Okay, so, but then, okay. Tov Shabaroi from the Gehenim, famous expression, the good doctors go to Gehenim. Now, why is that? So again, you have many, many different explanations. Starting with Rashi says, because doctors usually are not afraid of getting sick, because they figure they know it all. They eat very healthy food. So therefore, they don't feel humble. They don't feel like they don't feel they need the Eibishter.
Where does Rashi say that?
Rashi says that over here. Tov Shabaroi from the Gehenim. It says four lines from the bottom of the narrow lines in Rashi. Eina Yorim in Acholi. A doctor is typically not afraid of getting sick. Or Machol in Maichobrim. Hello? He eats the food of healthy people. Eina Meshabar Lim Alamachim. So his heart is not broken before the Eibishter. Or Pa'amim Shahurik in the Pasha. Sometimes he even kills people. Or sometimes he has the ability to heal a poor person who doesn't because he's not going to get a fee for it.
That's
So, okay, again, there's a vast number of other explanations on this Tov Shebarei from the Gehenim, including also the idea that we're talking, for example, about a doctor who, because he feels that he's an expert, he doesn't need to call in others for consultation. He figures, because after all, then what happens? He ends up killing the patient sometimes. It can be, for example, he does dangerous treatment, and then ends up killing the patient, whereas if he had been not so confident, he would ask. There's a famous Vartan, I think it's brought from the Mizrach Magid or from the Chernobyl Magid. I'm not sure that Toiv is in Matthew 17. So it refers to a doctor who, when he's davening, he doesn't care about the bracha Rufa'enu in Shemoneh Esrei. He doesn't feel the Eibush does the healer, he feels the healer. Right. So there's only 17 brachas for him in Shemoneh Esrei instead of 18. So there's that, and then on the other hand, there are the more positive spins on it, such as Toiv Shebaroifim is the kind of person who go to Gehenim to save, if necessary, to save a patient. I don't remember, but there's a vast number of explanations back and forth about the, you know, are we talking about, again, overconfident or whatever, or are we talking about, yeah. Okay. That kosher Shabbat Tabachim Shut Vishalamolik, and the most kosher among butchers is the partner of Amolik. Now why is that? Butchers, we're talking about Shoftim. What happens if there's a suffix whether an animal is treif? He's very likely to say, well, it's a shod to throw out such an expensive animal, he'll sell it as kosher to me, and meanwhile maybe he's being mashal people. Yeah. So there's that, and again, there's a lot of other interesting explanations about what we're saying over here. Marshall says the vote is that butchers, first of all, their clothing usually is filthy, and second of all, they usually look down on everybody else because, like, they're these big tough guys or whatever. So therefore, he says, kosher shemot avachim. If you see a tabach who's wearing his dirty clothes but he's speaking nicely like a kosher, don't be so quick to trust him. He may be like a mullah who at one point changed their clothes but still spoke the same language and attacked the Jewish people. So that's the connection with a mullah. Yeah. A lot of other interesting explanations also why that's the comparison to a mullah. There's one interesting one that one of the Mephoshim says. The Gemara tells us in Shabbos that if a person is born with a certain mazel, under the mazel of Mars, they're going to grow up to be somebody who sheds blood. Now, it can be in a negative way. For example, they become a robber or a killer or whatever. Or they can use it in a positive way, like becoming a moyel or a shoychet. So what happens? This guy, he could have become a moyel. Instead, he became a shoychet. Instead, he became a shoychet, the tabach. Which means, in a certain sense, he's saying, Mila is not important to me. Well, that's the same thing as Amalek did when they attacked the Jewish people and chopped off the Milas.
That's what they did?
Yeah, that's worth it. Mazar from Mila, same part of Mila, yeah. So. They kill Jews and then take the milah and throw it up to the Eibush as if like to say, hey, this is what you want, and fine, take it. The bazillion. Rav Nahuroi, remember? Maniach ani kol umnas shavarlam. Rav Nahuroi says, I would set aside all of the crafts and all of the trades in the world. The ani melamed es pnei ala Torah, and I will only teach my son Torah. What's so great about Torah? Shalom oichom is schar ba'olam hazeh. A person eats the schar of the Torah in this world. Ba'akeren kaimus lo le'olam haba. And he has the principal reward of it left over in le'olam haba. Ushal kol umnus einakein, whereas all other trades and crafts are not like that. All the ways of making a living are not. No. Suppose, for example, a person is working at some craft or some parnasa or whatever, and he becomes sick or old or has yisurin, then he can't do his work, then he's going to die of hunger because he doesn't have a way to make parnasa.
And someone who
wrote Torah, but the Torah is not like that. A person can still learn it when he's old, when he's sick, etc. And it saves him, it protects him from any evil when he's young. And it gives him a future and a hope when he's older. What does it say about when a person is young? The pasuk says, "V'koye Hashem yachlifu koyach." Those who trust in Hashem will renew their strength. So when a person is young and then trust in the Eibushter and learn Torah, then he constantly gets the strength renewed. B'ziknusay mahoim. What do you have a pasuk about when a person is old? Or yinuvun b'seva. Even when they're old, yinuvun, they'll continue to produce fruit.
Yinuvun means
like to produce fruit. Meloshin tenuva. Yeah. Marsha has a whole explanation, actually, how that entire kapitel tilim tells us the importance of learning Torah. Ish bar lo yeda, for example, a foolish person doesn't know, he doesn't consider yavin his life, he doesn't realize the importance of learning Torah. They flourish for a while and then disappear. Whereas Odin knew from the Savior, whereas the Tadik, Tadik, Hatamayif, Rachan, so forth. And thus we find it says by Avram, Avram Zakin, Avram was old, Hashem Berach as Avram Bakol, Hashem benched Avram with everything, meaning because he had learned Torah when he was younger, therefore he had the source of it when he was older as well. In fact, we find that Avraham Avinu did the entire Torah before it was given. Shenema, as opposed to Ekev Ashashama Avraham Bakoli, because Avraham listened to my voice, David, she tells Yitzchak, Vayishma Mishmarti, and he guarded what needs to be guarded, the Torah, mitzvot sefer kosev etzoroset, various categories of mitzvot. It's interesting, actually, the Gemara in Yuma brings this as a vort from Rav, rather than as part of a Mishnah. So there are Mefarshim who say that maybe it's not really part of the Mishnah, maybe it's just appended as a Braisa. And there's a lot of Mefarshim talk about various nuances of the difference between what it says here and what it says there. There's a key in here, it says also. The Rebbe has a sifa about it in one of his Hadronim on Kiddushin, that the when we're saying over here also Avraham Avinu saw Tertulah means doing without even maybe accomplishing anything, because after all, this is before the mitzvahs are given. Mitzvahs didn't really have an effect on the world, and yet Avraham did them, and the source of it lasted for him. Therefore, the Rebbe connects that with what we're saying before. Now, going back to what we said, where Nehoroi said that forget about all the umnus, I'm going to teach my son Torah. What about we learned that a person is supposed to teach his son a trade? So again, there's a lot of different discussions about it. Rav Moshe Feinstein has an interesting tshuva about it in Igros Moshe. He says that he mentions also the Rambam. He maybe starts by saying, you know, the Rambam never mentions anywhere in Yad HaZaka the thing that a father has to teach his son a trade. Evidently, it means that he holds like Rav Nehoroi. Maybe it means he holds halacha like Rav Nehoroi.
To teach only Torah.
What about the person needs to earn a living? And the Rambam himself says the person needs to work for a living. Basically, what Rav Moshe says is, when he's younger, teach him Torah. If you're not going to be teaching him Torah for whatever reason, he's not shyach for it, then yeah, you have to teach him an umnus, you have to teach him a trade. But if you're going to be teaching him Torah, let him focus exclusively on that. When he gets older, yeah, he'll have to find a trade on his own, not necessarily that you have to teach it to him. In other words, unlike the whole Gemara that we said before, that a father has a mitzvah to teach his son a trade, love that. It may be, yeah, b'di'evit, basically, if he's not going to be,
Until what age?
Doesn't say, but I don't know. So there's that. There's other explanations as well, including other Mephoroshim say that Rav Nehoroi is not saying for everybody generally. He's saying, maniach ani, meaning I can see that I'm not talking for the general run of people. The general run of people, in fact, has to teach their son an umrah. I see that my son has the kishroinus to be able to exclusively learn Torah. Therefore, that is what I'm going to do. And other people can follow that approach also, as the Gemara tells us in Brachos. Many people tried to follow Rashbi's method, where they only learned Torah. It didn't work out for them. Most people follow Rabbi Shmuel, that you work for a living and you have kriyas etim Torah. But after all, there are those few in every generation who follow Rav Shimon successfully. So the Rebbe actually connects that with that last line about Avraham Avinu. Just like Avraham Avinu did the mitzvahs without being told by the Eidishter, and without it really even accomplishing anything in the world, because it was before Matan Torah. But yet he had a quote from it. The same way Rav Nehoroi is saying, yes, the Eidishter did not tell me to teach my son only Torah, because usually the general run of people have to work for a living. However, it is something that your person can decide on their own if they and their children are shy at it, if they feel that it's the right thing to do, and the Eidishter will help them like he helped Avraham Avinu. Okay. We want to turn it up. Going back to the beginning of the Mishnah, that we said that men who do work that involves women have problems with yichud. Turn it up. And kol sha'asokah v'manoshim surei rav. Anybody who regularly works with women has a bad minhag. Rashi says surei literally means like his relation, like the evil, meaning the Yetzer Hara, is constantly trying to get him to turn aside into his house, so to speak. Like he's much more susceptible to averus. Kugoyin, for example, seraphim, goldsmith, because they make jewelry for women. Basarikim, people who comb out women's clothes. Anakoros, people who clean millstone, because the women regularly did the grinding around the house, so therefore it would be the people whose job it is to clean and then fix the millstones would be around women a lot. Vahroichlin, peddlers, because they sold cosmetics. Vahgaudium, weavers. Vahsaporim, barbers. Either because... No, so Rashi says because the women bring their children for haircuts. other Mepharshim said because he gives haircuts to the women themselves.
Cannot mean.
Whether he can or he can't, maybe he can because Ba'avid Tei Tari. So there's certain, in certain cases, in Halacha, we say that when a person is busy with his work, then he does his work, it's not going to bring him to Hebrew. For example, we know a man is allowed to be a gynecologist. So yeah. So anyway. Ba'akovsim and laundry men. Ba'agara and bloodletters. Ba'abalon and bathhouse attendants. Ba'aburski and tanners. Tanners are actually good because they smell bad. Fine, but on the other hand, they make leather goods. So therefore, they make leather shoes, purses, etc. And the Gemara continues: Ein ma midin lahem lamelech for a kohen gadol. You are not allowed to appoint any of these as a king or as a kohen gadol. My timer loy mishum debzili, not so much because they're apostle per se. Elam mishum debzilu minasayer, but because they have a very degrading job, and therefore people are going to look down on them. You want that people should look up to a king or to a kohen gadol. Fine, really, is not when it's not on the list.
No.
Now there are mepharshim. I believe Marsha says this, and actually the Rambam seems to say as much. That we're not talking about maybe the entire list. The list actually divides into two. The first half of the list is people, shastaka, imanashim, people whose business brings them into contact with women a lot. The second half of the list, the laundrymen, the bloodletters, etc., are ones that have a very degrading occupation. Not so much the problem that they're around women, but the problem that people look down on. Since we're mentioning bloodletters, asorat varim nemra begara, there are 10 things, the 10 characteristics about bloodletters. A mahalach al tzidai, he walks on his side, you know, he walks like this, in a gaivadik way. Veruche gase, he's a bal gaiva. Venitla v'yoshev, and he leans back when he sits, which actually says those first three things all imply that he's a gaivadik kind of person. Because he knows he has people's lives in his hands. He knows people need him all the time. Bloodletting was the common remedy in those days for everything. So therefore he knows Ve'enet tzara, he's stingy. Because usually when people have bloodlet, they need to have a good meal afterwards. And necessarily he's in their house, so of course they have to invite him to sit down. So he doesn't really have to spend very much money on his own food, and therefore he becomes stingy. The Eino Ra, he's stingy. He doesn't spend much money of his own. He has a bad eye, meaning that he gives people an ayin hara. He's always looking, halabai, this person gets sick and he's going to need my services. He eats a lot and when he goes to the bathroom, he produces very little because, again, he's eating very high quality food. So most of it gets digested. He's choshered on arayas because, again, there are women always coming to him as his clientele. Balagezel, and I'm stealing.
Because what he used to do, the women.
Both men and women used to come as clients, yeah. So he's choshered on gezel because women, for example, when they feel they need extra bloodletting, they'll take money from their husband without permission and come to him. And on spilling blood, because, for example, what if he takes out too much blood and then kills the person, or even not maybe kills the person, but weakens him a great deal, yeah. Now, again, we're not saying every bloodletter. The Gemara tells us in Tainus, for example, about a bloodletter, Abu Ubna, in the times of Abaye and Rava, who was on such a high level, he acted in such a chassidish way in his business that he would receive a greeting from the Yeshiva Shomaila every day. But we're talking about the average kind. Darish Bakapara. A person should always teach his son a clean and easy craft. Yeah, it is a repeat of the Mishnah. So, right. So some Mepharshim say the vote is that the Mishnah, maybe in the Mishnah, the Girsa was not Bakala. Maybe in the Mishnah, the Girsa was only Nakia, and Bar Kapara is adding the word Bakala. Maihi, what is an Umnes Nakia Bakala? I'm Rabbi Huda. Machta the Talmud Yusa. It means sewing. Machta means a needle. The Talmud Yosef means literally a furrow. Rashi explains that you have the stitches go in very neat rows like furrows in a field. So sort of like embroidery or making quilts or whatever. Tosfos read it as a different explanation. He says it means making needles. Because embroidery, you have the same problem when you're around women a lot. If you make needles, then you're not.
Not so much.
And again, the idea is it's easy, it's relatively easy, it's clean in the sense that there's no gezel involved. Tanya, Rebbe Yomer, Ein lecha umnes she'iveres min ha'olam, there's no kind of craft or trade that ever goes away from the world, no matter whether it's an umnes nekiyah or not. There's somebody, meaning in other words, that there's even the degrading jobs, even the jobs that we said that you shouldn't teach your son, ultimately somebody needs to do them. Ashri Mishiroya Torah Ba'umnas Mula. So fortunate is a person who sees his parents, and Rashi adds his children, in a good quality line of business. Oyla the Mishiroya Torah Ba'umnas Pugumah, and woe to a person who sees his parents in a degrading job because then he's probably going to follow them into it. For example, the world can't exist without perfumers and without tanners. But Ashri Mishal Munose Bastam, but happy is a person whose craft is to be a perfume dealer, but Oila or spice dealer, but Oila Mishal Munose Burski, and woe to a person whose job ends up being a tanner. It's a dirty job, but somebody's got to do it, but often say that you have to be that somebody.
So many people who used to be most.
Another example, the world can't exist without males and females, but Ashri Mishabonav Skorim, happy is a person whose children are males, but Oyla the Mishabonav Nakavis, and woe to a person whose children are females. So what does this mean? Again, you have a number of different explanations. One interesting one that I used to hear even when I was a kid is that if your sons act like Nakavis, then you have a problem. In other words, there's a certain way that boys are supposed to act. There's a certain way that girls are supposed to act. When you have nowadays the kind of thing like, boys pretend to be girls and girls pretend to be boys and whatever, then you start having problems. There's other explanations also, including, yes, you should have girls, but you're better off if you have more boys, basically, yeah. Rameo, I mean,
you know that.
What?
You know that.
I have five boys and a girl. That's true. Reb Meir, La'olam yilamad adam loy umnas niki avakala. A person should always teach his son, as we said in the Mishnah, a clean and easy kind of job. V'yivakash rachmim liyusha oshavan achosim shaloi. And he should always ask for rachmanus from the Eibishter to whom riches and property belong. Shein anias min umnas vein ashiras min umnas, because you don't become poor from a certain kind of work, you don't become rich from a certain kind of work. Elal misha osha shaloi. It all depends on the one, on the Eibishter, who owns all the wealth. Shenema as a pastor. Liya ketzav liya zav no masham tzvakas. The silver and the gold are all mine, says the Eibishter.
He's the one
who's ultimately in charge. The Mishnah said, "Rav Shimon Elazar, may Miri see me a mecha. Have you ever seen animals that had to work for a living?" So the Gemara expands on this a little bit. Tanya, Rav Shimon Elazar, miyamei lo ra'iti tzvi kayas. In my whole life, I never saw, for example, a deer that works as a fruit dryer. You dry fruit in the field and you watch it throughout the season. The ari sabol, or a lion, which is a very powerful creature, be a porter. The shuol chenveni, or a fox, which is a very crafty, cunning creature, be a storekeeper. The Hamas Barnes and Shalabat Tsar, and yet they get their panopter without any tsar. Again, like we said, they don't have to work for a living.
No.
Why we're mentioning these examples, different Mepharshim talk about, for example, a tzvi, or a deer, whenever it sleeps. It sleeps like it closes one eye at a time. So therefore, like it always has one eye open, therefore it makes an ideal watchman.
So it's tsar,
yeah.
Isn't it?
No, but the point is that's nature. Natural. But yeah. The Rebbe has a sikha about it, in another one, the Hadronim, Chedet Tesvav, the Rebbe has a long discussion about it, that the kayas represents the idea of taking the raw materials of the world and making them usable for Avodah Hashem. The sabol represents bringing them from point A to point B so they're available to you. The chenveni represents the idea of transferring it into your ownership. The kayas, the dried fruit, represents changing the raw state of the raw material to make it into something usable.
And the other one?
The ari is that it brings it from point A to point B, right. So that it's in your, so that it's near you. And the shul, the chenveni, makes it available to you. He puts it in your possession. So therefore, it represents like these animals. Therefore, and then the job that they would have, if they supposedly represent like how the world works together to make you able to serve Avishta. Anyway, the Hamlin Nivra El Shamshani, they were created only to serve me. Lani Nivrace of the Shamashani, and I was created to serve my creator. Ma Elu Shalanivru El Shamshani Mispanus Shlevatar. So look, we said in the Mishnah, Madach, these creatures who were created to serve me, they have their panosa without tsar. Banisha Nivrace of the Shamashani, I who was created to serve the Ebishta any dinchain of Spanish Shlevatar. How much more so I should have panosa without tsar? Why should I have to work for a living? El Shara is yes, my Kipakti is panosasi, but I messed up my actions. I didn't act the way I'm supposed to, and therefore I damaged my livelihood. Shenema, as opposed to
my personal actions.
My personal, more broadly, the humanity in general, the Chet Hadas, etc.
I mean, it's a bit contradictory to what it says in Bereishis, that because of the Chet.
Because of the Chet Hadas. It was started without the Murishin, but it's not like most of us are any better. Shenema, I mean, it's Seichem Hitu, as the Pasuk says, you are there to have turned away the Evishtha's goodness from you. The Mishnah said, Rav Nehoroya Maniach Ani Eskol Omnus Chol Tanya. We learn in a Braise, which says similar to the Mishnah. Rav Nehoroya Maniach Ani Kol Omnus Chol Olam. I would leave aside all of the crafts in the world. But any Malamidus Mi Ela Torah, I would teach my son only Torah. Kol Omnus Chol Olam Ani Menes Lele Bimei Yalbusa, because any craft only stands by you when you're young. When you're old, then you're in hunger because you don't have what to work for a living. But Torah is not like that. And it stands by a person when he's young. And it gives him a future and a hope when he's old. And when a person is young, it says that those who hope, those who trust in the Eivishter will renew their strength. They'll grow new feathers like eagles. And what does it say when a person is old? Or you know from the Savior, the Shenim Ran Animu, they'll still continue to produce fruit. When they're old, they'll be fresh and they'll be evergreen. The Braisa is basically saying the same thing as the Mishnah, and not even at such length. It's saying even shorter, actually. So some of the Poshim say the Gemara just quoted it over here because it wanted to end with a Dover Tov, it wanted to end on a happy note rather than on a Seichem Hitu. And then ever talks about Nesicha, the idea that in the Mishnah, Rav Nehoroya is focusing on the rewards you get for Torah. Rav Nehoroya, therefore, is talking about how you start teaching a kid. He says, the Malamed is Bni, Ela Torah. Whereas here, he's talking about the essential, the essence of Torah itself. The great, not so much focusing on the Schar, but the fact that the Torah is something that stays with you for your entire life.
The worthiness,
right. Hadron al-Hasar al-Yuchsin, a slickle of a Sefta Kedushin.